Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on new restrictions on business operations in Lake County to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19. The City of Gary's welcoming ordinance being struck down by a Lake County judge. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Terry Villigan, General Manager of Operations for Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Lake County Health Officer Dr. Shandana Vivalala issued an order Tuesday enacting new restrictions on business operations that are significantly more stringent than the red county standards recently imposed by Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb because of the surging number of COVID cases and hospitalizations. The new restrictions, which are authorized by Indiana law and the governor's executive order, take effect Monday and will continue in force until modified or rescinded by the county health officer. The Times reports, under the order, Lake County shopping malls and retail stores are limited to 75% capacity. Restaurants and retail food establishments are limited to 50% indoor capacity, while bars and nightclubs can only admit 25% of their maximum capacity. In addition, all restaurants, bars, nightclubs, and retail food establishments must be closed and cleared of all customers between midnight and 5 a.m. every day of the week. Personal services businesses, including salons, barbershops, nail salons, spas, and tattoo parlors, may remain open at full capacity but must serve customers by appointment only. Gyms, fitness centers, yoga, dance, and martial arts studios are limited to 25% capacity, along with non-essential entertainment businesses such as movie theaters, bowling alleys, marinas, and rock wall climbing facilities. Office and religious buildings can stay open, but remote work is strongly recommended wherever feasible. All elementary and high school sporting events, along with club and recreational league activities, are limited to participants, support personnel, parents, and guardians. Employees and customers at businesses open to the public must wear a mask. Social gatherings in Lake County cannot exceed more than 25 people absent an approved COVID-19 mitigation plan and special permission from the County Health Department. The restrictions do not apply in Gary and East Chicago, since each city is served by its own health department and health officer.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A Gary ordinance that limited how city officials could cooperate with federal immigration authorities was struck down. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on a Lake County judge's recent ruling on the welcoming ordinance passed in 2017.
The ordinance barred city employees from asking about someone's immigration status or denying them services or benefits without being forced to by a court order. It also told city departments and officials not to stop, arrest, or detain anyone at the request of the federal government. Enforcing immigration laws, the city said, is the responsibility of the federal government. But top conservative attorney Jim Bopp sued, supported by Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill. He argued a 2011 state law prohibits such an ordinance. That law says no Indiana governmental bodies or universities can refuse to cooperate with federal authorities when it comes to citizenship or immigration information. A Lake County judge agreed with Bopp and struck down the ordinance. The city of Gary hasn't said whether it will appeal the decision. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Indiana Gaming Commission appears to be preparing to bring the hammer down on the parent company of Gary's Majestic Star Casinos and the under-construction Hard Rock Casino for allegedly violating state gaming laws and regulations. The Times reports IGC Executive Director Sarah Tate told the commission Monday the investigation of alleged misdeeds now involves more than 10 individuals associated with Spectacle Entertainment or predecessor company Centaur Gaming and goes beyond the federal campaign finance violations that sparked the initial inquiry. Specifically, the items under review include financial transactions, ownership transfers, contracts, failures to disclose, improper utilization of funds, improper accounting practices, failure to act within occupational licensing parameters, ex parte communications, and other actions that run afoul of the good moral character and integrity standards required of all Indiana casino licensees. Several commissioners suggested at Monday's meeting immediate removal may be needed once the investigation is finished to eliminate implicated licensees. The 7-member Gaming Commission has broad authority under Indiana's Riverboat Gaming Statute and state regulations to take action to preserve public confidence in gaming and the economic development generated by the industry. The Gaming Commission also has the power to replace Spectacle as the owner with a trustee in waiting until the casinos can be sold to another owner, potentially Hard Rock International, which already is under contract with Spectacle to operate the Hard Rock Casino in Gary when it opens next year. A spokeswoman for Spectacle Entertainment did not return a request for comment on the investigation or possible sanctions.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana University Northwest is offering rapid decision admission to students who apply before December 1st, 2020, to allow students to meet the priority scholarship consideration deadline on the same day. IU Northwest awards nearly $1 million in scholarships every year to incoming freshmen and transfer students. In order to qualify for multiple scholarships awarded by the Office of Admissions, students must have applied and been admitted by December 1 for priority consideration. The December 1 priority consideration deadline applies to the academic, the Chancellor's Merit, and the Raise Me scholarships. In addition to these scholarships, IU Northwest offers scholarship opportunities to students enrolled in IU dual credit classes, 21st Century Scholars, adult learners over the age of 24, transfer students, and residents of the Emerson neighborhood in Gary. For more information on available scholarships, visit www.iun.edu/scholarships. To apply to IU Northwest, visit www.iun.edu/admissions/apply.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election will make Donald Trump just the 10th president to serve a single term in the White House. So what does the future hold for Vice President Mike Pence? Mitch Ligon has more.
Vice President Mike Pence is widely believed to have presidential ambitions of his own. But Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics, says given the outcome of this election, that'll be tough for the former Indiana governor.
It is difficult for vice presidents who were part of a losing ticket to come back and be a viable candidate for president. If you look at someone like Walter Mondale, yes, he was the nominee, but it did not go well.
Downs points to former Vice President Al Gore as another recent example and says President-elect Biden's success in 2020 after years of failed campaigns is actually a bit of an anomaly. More than any other potential 2024 Republican candidate, Pence's future is tied to President Trump's.
The big question for me is, what does Donald Trump do? Does Donald Trump say, well, I'm going to run because I want to beat this guy in 4 years? Does he say, I want my son to run, I want Ivanka to run? What's he do? Because he could really screw up any plans Mike Pence has.
And the president is reportedly seriously considering running again in 24. As for Pence,
he also has to maintain legitimacy nationwide, whether that's by becoming a talking head on Fox or on some other network.
In the short term, Pence is expected to spend time on money-making ventures, including paid speeches and potentially writing a book. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Mitch Legan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
More than 5,000 Hoosiers have now died from COVID-19. While state officials have tried to slow the spread of the virus, some health experts say it wasn't enough. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Angiano reports on the state's steps and missteps on the path to the latest grim milestone.
To put that number in perspective, 5,000 people is enough to fill about 25 Boeing 737s. 5,000 people was also the size of the student body at Butler University in 2017. Indiana saw its first COVID-19 case in early March and its first death 10 days later. By the end of the month, Governor Eric Holcomb had issued a stay-at-home order. In May, he announced the Back on Track plan, meant to ease the state into reopening. Slowly but surely, restrictions were lifted. The state was supposed to reach stage 5 by the 4th of July, but it wouldn't be until late September when,
because of the progress that we've made, we'll be able to move on to stage 5 of our Back on Track plan.
Dr. Rom Yaletti is with Community Health Network in Marion County. Yaletti led the team that treated Indiana's first COVID patient. He says when COVID first exploded throughout the state, his concerns focused on inadequate staffing, PPE, ventilators, and testing. Yaletti says while the state managed to get supplies sorted out, staffing remains a problem.
The thing that I lose sleep over is that there'll be no hospital bed available in the city of Indianapolis because we're overwhelmed, because we don't have enough staff. The problem we're going to face this time, Barbara, from before, is that if building a field hospital won't work because we won't have any nurses to staff it.
While the state worked out logistical issues to get supplies where they were needed, health experts tell us it fell short with its one-size-fits-all approach to communications, contact tracing, and enforcement of mandates, especially in many rural and minority communities. Brian Dixon with the Reconstruction Institute says many of these communities were already dealing with disparities and inequities that were exacerbated by the pandemic. He says, pandemic or not, the state should have had established working relationships with community organizations and groups that know the needs of those communities to help address these problems.
I think the state could have done a better job in helping local health departments put restrictions in place when things got bad in that area, that the state is advising them to do so, but not necessarily helping them with enforcement as much as they could.
Representation matters in public health too, according to Dixon. He says enlisting the help of healthcare liaisons already in those communities can streamline processes like contact tracing and translating information to cater to the needs of communities these workers already know. Dixon says this also applies to mask mandates. He says the state could have done more to communicate the strategies and importance of wearing a mask. The confusion over whether or not masks should be used only made things more complicated for these communities that were already feeling the brunt of the pandemic.
If we would have been able to have policies like universal mask mandate earlier in the cycle, and people realized that it was important, and if they violated it, there would be a consequence, then I do think we'd be in a better position.
The state recently implemented new guidelines to slow the spread of the virus. Counties in harder hit areas must follow additional regulations. As deaths from COVID-19 continue to rise, Dr. Rom Yaletti with Community Health dreads the next several weeks. Based on his projections, he's waiting on the day he won't have enough staff to deal with the rising number of hospitalizations.
Not trying to say the sky's falling, but I do lose sleep over that. That's a very real catastrophic possibility in the next few weeks.
In the next few weeks?
Yeah, by December, and by Christmas time.
For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Anguiano.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Terry Velligan, General Manager of Operations for Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC.
It won't be long that motorists, truck, and vehicular traffic will be able to make it onto the Klein Avenue Bridge in East Chicago. The final segments are in place. The touch-up work is now being done to complete the bridge to have it up and open soon. To tell us more about the process, how it's coming along, and all the process along the way, we have Terry Velligan. He is the General Manager of Operations for the Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC, the organization that is actually building the bridge. Terry, thanks for joining us again on Regionally Speaking. It's been a while since we last talked, but if you will, bring us up to date. Maybe we should start out, I guess, first, though, with a little primer as to what the bridge is all about and what it's constructed. It's one of the most unique constructed bridges, I guess, that's around the country these days.
Yes, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. And yes, we're moving along with the bridge, as you noted, and we are scheduled to be open this winter. So we are moving along, and we're right on schedule. The bridge itself is, for your listeners, is connecting the SR 912, which is Klein Avenue, and the bridge has been down for 10 years or so, and we are rebuilding it. And it's a vital infrastructure project that will help alleviate a lot of the congestion in Northwest Indiana, specifically as anybody drove on 8094. We anticipate that many of that vehicle traffic will divert going up to Chicago. And anybody who takes the bridge will find out that it's a faster route to Chicago. So we are excited about that opportunity to help with some of the congestion in Lake County.
That's been a big problem, we know, over the last decade now, since the old bridge had to be torn down because of structural deficiencies, and you had to basically create the new bridge, to be sure. What is it about the new bridge that is so different from anything that's been built or put up before? Certainly there along that stretch over the canal in East Chicago, but maybe probably any place else in Northwest Indiana.
Yes, it's a unique structure in itself. It's a balanced cantilever bridge, but they've been around for quite a number of years. But we've taken considerable interest in maintaining and owning the bridge as Klein Avenue Bridge. So we put in some protocols and processes to ensure that this bridge is done. Number one priority for us is commuter safety. And also we incorporated some aesthetics that will give pride to Northwest Indiana and East Chicago. It's going to be a beautiful bridge. Anybody that passes by it now will see the unique structure of the bridge and how it's being constructed.
When you came up with the idea, you and your designers with FIG Bridge Partners, and what things were you looking at in particular that you wanted to make unique with this bridge design that maybe some of the others the company's made might have some features that have worked in the past, but you want to make it special this time?
Well, one of the things that we focused on is, first and foremost, is actually the impact it'll have on Lake County. In terms of traffic. I mean, that was our very first focus. The bridge itself, in terms of aesthetics and how it's constructed, was a close second, but it's unique in the fact that it's a box girder, so each segment of the bridge was actually in a controlled environment when we're making the boxes or segments, as we call them.
Right.
So we actually constructed a casting building, and we casted all the segments in that casted building to create a controlled environment. So that's really what we wanted to do, is make sure we control every aspect of it, and as well as remain on target to complete the bridge.
Right. Now, when you set up the casting building, it gave you the opportunity to create these segments one at a time and take them out for storage at the time. How long did they have to stand out outdoors in storage before the crews could actually put them in place up there on the bridge itself?
One of the things that we did is we needed to make enough of the segments, that we wouldn't get ahead of ourselves when they started actually putting up the segments.
Right.
So we casted a number of segments well ahead of time, and once they reached a certain PSI strength, as you call it,
right,
then we were able to set them outside. And obviously, you know, in this area, the conditions change quite rapidly. So one of the things is that the designers and engineers ensured that each segment was made to spec, and then we were able to set it outside.
Now, bring us up to date here in the last few months. Unfortunately, with the coronavirus pandemic causing, I'm sure, some delays in getting some of the work done, what did you and the crews have to do to try to work around that? Or could you continue doing a lot of this work even though the pandemic is underway?
We continued to do a lot of this work while the pandemic was on its way.
Yeah.
One of the things that we focused on is, again, how do we complete this with everything else going on? And I think we achieved that. So we kept working, made some adjustments, but everybody kept working. And we're looking to get this bridge complete and opened up.
That's great. Give us an idea of what this last month has been like here when you finally got to the point early in November that you got to the last segments to put them in place. What was the atmosphere like on the work site in getting these last segments ready to go?
I think that really comes from the workforce in Northwest Indiana. We are a strong workforce here, and they take pride in everything that they do. And I think that was one of the things that the workforce really showed is they have an interest in this bridge. They take pride in their area, whether it be Northwest Indiana or some South Chicago. So it was really exciting for them as well as us to reach a point at we could see the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and I commend the workforce. They worked very hard to build this bridge. It's a long project, but now they could see that we're coming to the end, and I think, you know, they're excited about it.
Yeah. So. Now, Terry, since this bridge is about to be completed, it's hoped to be opened up to traffic in the early part of winter months coming up. What are you going to be able to do, since it's going to be a toll bridge, would be able to do to make it certainly convenient for people to get them used to traveling on the bridge and to be able to get the big truck traffic that has been clogging up 80-94 and probably to an extent I-65 as well, all trying to connect up with Chicago, to get them to be able to use this bridge now instead of the old route?
One of the things is we have a marketing plan in place. We worked really hard with NDOT to redo a lot of the highway signage to now give notice where Klein Avenue Bridge is. A lot of signs will be going on 8094. We also have a marketing plan that will incorporate a lot of billboards, newspaper, media such as yourself, to give notice to the commuters and the truck traffic, not only that the bridge is opening, we want to educate, we want to create awareness where the bridge is located, and then the third thing we're doing is offer incentives. So the first month of opening is going to be free, so we entice people to try us out and see how they like the bridge, and really to see how much of a faster route it is into and out of Chicago. So we're kind of like the gateway of Lake County, just on the southern tip of Chicago and the northern tip of Indiana. So we think that a lot of people will see the benefits of taking Klein Avenue Bridge and going in and out of Lake County.
Are you excited about not only having a chance to get this this project finished up here, but getting to see more people take advantage of it?
I think so. I mean, I grew up in this area, and I know what the old Klein Avenue Bridge provided, a lot of positive impacts, not only for the commuters, but also for industry in this area. We see a lot of heavy haul or truck and tractor trailers on 8094. And I think that a lot of that traffic will take Klein Avenue Bridge, and a lot of people will see the benefits of traveling again. One of the things is it's going to be a new bridge. The rideability is going to be great. The efficiency of having that connection again will be great. And I think Northwest Indiana and the northern part of Indiana will see a huge benefit, not only from a traffic standpoint, but also an economic standpoint. It'll allow more commerce to get in and out of Lake County in an efficient amount of time.
Terry Velligan is the General Manager of Operations for Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC. That's the organization that has been in charge of constructing the bridge that soon will be open up to traffic here in the early months of winter coming up. Terry, thank you for being with us. Thank you for the updates. And we hope that the people get to enjoy taking the new route instead of having to take the old, much more cluttered route.
Yes, well, I appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for your interest, and I'm sure that people are going to be excited about the opening this winter, and also that they'll be able to try out the new bridge for free for the first 30 days. But that'll be important for people.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.